talk to us about the DA's position on this matter as the clock ticks for President Cyril Ramaphosa. I'm joined on the line by the DA's chief whip, Mr. John Steenhuisen. Mr. Steenhuisen, good evening. Welcome to the show.
Good evening to you, Karima, and to the listeners. It's great to be back with you this evening.
Now, of course, we know that there was a meeting last Friday held at Mr. Ramaphosa's house between Mr. Gigaba and Mr. Ramaphosa. Subsequently, we've seen documents to the effect that Mr. Gigaba believes that he acted correctly in not granting the Oppenheimers an agreement. And there's a lot of speculation around whether or not Cyril Ramaphosa is in fact going to be getting rid of Mr. Gigaba. And Mr. Gigaba is literally fighting for his political life. You've previously said this is the litmus test for the Ramaphosa administration around whether there's a genuine cleanup or not. What is the DA's expectation? And more importantly, what does the DA plan to do to compel the president to act against Mr. Gigaba?
Well, as you know, Karima, we're already in court on both Gigaba and Batabile Dlamini on their appointment to the Ramaphosa cabinet. And we are challenging the fact that they were appointed to the cabinet in the first place. But I certainly don't think there's any way out for the president on this. I mean, this is a very clear-cut matter. Whatever documents Mr. Gigaba is pulling out of his notebooks now, frankly, have been disproved in four different courts of law. And we now have a definitive finding by the Constitutional Court, which dismissed his application. And so the president's in a very, very difficult position, because these aren't just allegations that are made by the opposition. This is a public protector's report findings. It is the findings of the apex court in South Africa. And the president, frankly, ignores these at his peril. I don't think there's any way out of him but to let Mr. Gigaba go.
All right, Mr. Steenhuisen, we've got to take a break. We will continue this conversation after the news. And, of course, it's a critical conversation, as you say, because this is not just a demand by the opposition, but, of course, by different arms of the state, including a Chapter 9 institution and the apex court in the land. 5 minutes after 9 o'clock. Hello, good evening. Welcome. If you've just joined us, this is the second hour of the Karima Brown Show. You are listening to 702. And of course, this is the time where you get to have your say. The number to dial 011-883-0702. You can also send me an SMS on 31702. And you can WhatsApp me on 072-702-1702. Now, we were previously, before the news, in conversation with the DA chief whip, Mr. John Steenhuisen, regarding the fate of Malusi Gigaba. And of course, the public protector has told the president that he needs to be acted against. And of course, a court of law, the highest court in the land, have found that Mr. Gigaba, in fact, lied. Mr. Gigaba, of course, is desperately trying to save his skin and suggesting that he has acted in the interests of the country and that Fireblade had no business operating its own terminal. Mr. Steenhuisen, welcome back to the program. To round off our conversation around Mr. Gigaba, this attempt to construct an alternative narrative, and Mr. Gigaba has released the statement, and of course he has released the correspondence between all the other departments. How does this square up with the decision of the apex court? Is Mr. Gigaba in a position to say that the court came to an incorrect decision, given the testimony that he has put through and given the chronological, a sequence of events relating to whether or not the state had in fact given the Oppenheimers the go-ahead to go ahead with the terminal?
Yeah, Karima, it's problematic because he's now trying to fit all these defences into the back door when he's completely exhausted all his avenues. I mean, mm-hmm. We all know once the Constitutional Court has judged a matter or expressed itself in a matter, you run out of road and you must accept the outcome of that. The problem is that Mr. Gigaba is now trying to craft and weave the story that he's a victim of this grand, broad conspiracy to deny him the presidency of the Republic of South Africa. But we've seen this movie so many times before with Minister Gigaba, whether it was the scandal around his sending flowers to his wife using public money when he was at Home Affairs originally, to the video saga, etc. There's always a conspiracy. It's always everybody else.
Mm.
It's never Mr. Gigaba stepping up and saying, I've done wrong, I've erred, I'm going to fall on my sword.
Mm.
He's now trying to craft this alternative narrative to try and deflect attention away from his own shortcomings. Frankly, he should have done what Minister Nene did, fallen on a sword, done the honourable thing, and stepped down from his position. He could, I think, have been be able to, at some stage down the line, revive his political career. But this hanging on is just simply unseen. And to then put your political principle in the form of Mr. Ramaphosa in this terrible position also goes to show that Mr. Gigaba cares about nobody and nothing other than himself and his own skin.
Now, of course, Mr. Gigaba, apart from the current mess that he finds himself in, which is the issue of Fireblade, and of course the embarrassing sexual video that he apologized to the country for before it even surfaced and made it to Pornhub, is the fact that he's also accused of being what people call the great enabler of state capture, because after the firing of Ms. Hogan, he of course took over as the public enterprises minister. Mr. Steenhuisen, I just want us to take a listen to the explosive testimony of Barbara Hogan, where she talks about the fact that there was no clarity on how exactly, people were appointed and why they got into certain state institutions.
There was no clarity on this. Even when there were talks of a deployment committee, I would ask, now, who's on this deployment committee and who's doing what? And I would be told, well, it's really not functional. So, you know, that leaves you very confused about what is happening.
That is, of course, Ms. Barbara Hogan speaking there about the way in which people get to certain institutions. Now, the two appointments that always stands out for me, Mr. Steenhuisen, around Mr. Gigaba's decision to appoint people is the two Indian nationals. He appointed one to SAA and the other one to Transnet. And of course, these jobs were not advertised internationally. And out of the billion Indians that exist, these two particular ones happen to apply for these jobs. In the case of SAA, the person had absolutely no aviation qualifications. And we, of course, know that it's the shareholder that signs off on who makes it onto the board. And this is the same person that is in the Gupta leaks writing to Rajesh Gupta, begging him to put him on another state-owned company because he was about to lose his job on the board at SAA. Mr. Gigaba has much, much more to answer for than just Fireblade, doesn't he?
Of course, and if one looks back at his career and every single incarnation in cabinet, you can trace activity that was done to enable the Guptas and make their lives easier. So whether it was proving, whether they had citizenship, but fast-tracking that using ministerial discretion, whether it was appointing people at public enterprises, whether it was the people that he brought with him when he finally got hold of that last castle, National Treasury, just before Mr. Zuma's fall, you can see very clearly what the pattern is. And he would get in and bring these people that are part of this network and web of influence within the Guptas and bring them into the fold. And so, I think as the State Capture Commission unfolds, I think the charge sheet against Mr. Gigaba is going to grow longer and longer. He's got a lot to answer for. I don't think he's made a full account. Certainly, I watched his testimony in Parliament before the Eskom Inquiry Committee.
Mm-hmm.
I think that there were some leaps of logic and, frankly, unbelievable situations and statements which he painted there. And I think those need to be probed. I think that's why that committee has come to the decision that he's got a lot more to answer for than he gave. So it should be an open and shut case, frankly, for the president, because if he is committed to cleaning out state capture root and branch, then here's an opportunity to strike at the very heart of one of the chief enablers, and that's Minister Mugabe.
Now, some political observers noted that although, like you say, it should be obvious that Mr. Mugabe must be axed, Mr. Ramaphosa booting Mugabe from his cabinet, Mkwebane did not prescribe Mugabe's exact punishment, finding only appropriate disciplinary action. And there is, in fact, a little bit of leverage that the public protector has given Mr. Ramaphosa, and that it could, for example, be argued that just before an election, the ANC wouldn't want to divide itself. Do you agree with that analysis?
Well, I think there's two important things here. First of all, there is precedent. I mean, it's not the first time that Mr. Ramaphosa has faced the situation. You may recall there were similar findings around Lynn Brown and Des van Rooyen.
Yes.
And his response to that was that, he excluded them from his cabinet.
Mm-hmm.
So there is precedent for excluding people from your cabinet when they have been found to have breached the Constitution, the oath of office by the public protector. So that precedent exists there. I think the political problem here, and that the president's putting on his ANC hat rather than the head of the executive hat, is that Mr. Mugabe comes from KwaZulu-Natal. Now, KwaZulu-Natal is going to be a very difficult province for the ANC in this next election. Mr. Zuma is still a spectre that looms very, very large in that political landscape. And so any moves against people in KZN will always have a knock-on effect. So whilst, what should be front and centre is protecting the executive and his cabinet from this type of infection, but at the back of his mind is always how is this going to play out politically. And I think that's probably why you've seen this delay and lack of decisiveness to date on Minister Mugabe, because I don't think he wants another martyr or victim for the Zuma Zupta Act in KZN, which would probably have an impact on the most vote-rich and most branch members for the ANC in the country.
Absolutely. Pretty much like the DA situation with Ms. Patricia de Lille, I would think, Mr. John Steenhuisen. That is where we will leave it. Thank you very much to the DA Chief Whip, Mr. John Steenhuisen. It's just gone 9:15. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, we look at multi-choice, which was found to may have been by the Competition Commission to may have captured the SABC through a merger.